When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. This with me is a man named Charles W. Chuck Bryant, who's a little under the weather right now.
Yes.
You sick?
Yes, and that should come through in this show.
If you get me sick.
I'm not going to get you sick. I got my own little mic cover
with
my name on it.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it, probably burn it. Actually, I'm not going to burn it because it's pricey.
Didn't the company get it for you, though?
Oh, yeah, but I don't want to waste the company money.
That is good thinking.
Yeah, I'm a little ill, so all apologies, people, but we like to soldier on here.
Yeah.
At SYSK.
We meet our deadlines.
Remember when we often talk about when you were sick for 8 months?
It was a long time, yeah.
I'm hoping this is no more than a few shows.
Maybe even just these two.
That's what I'm hoping.
Because we're recording two today.
Yeah.
But I feel bad for you because both of them are kind of chilly.
Yes.
Especially this one.
Wintery topics.
Yeah. Well, it's almost always winter in Antarctica, even when it's summer.
'Tis the season.
Chuck.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a guy named Captain Robert Scott?
Bobby Scott?
Yeah, Bob Scott.
Oh, Cappy?
I think he went by Rob instead of Bobby.
I don't know him.
He was one of the first two people, or led one of the first two expeditions to make it to the South Pole. Antarctica. And he was beaten by just 4 weeks by a Norwegian rival.
I thought you were going to say he's beaten by a polar bear or something like that.
No, well, he did die.
Oh, really?
A 5-man team made it to the South Pole and started making their way back and just hit some real freak weather. And the guy, the team meteorologist, was in that 5-man team and just felt awful that he'd missed this prediction.
Yeah.
And they were just buffeted by, I think, negative 40, negative 90, just ridiculously cold temperatures.
So freak weather, or as they call it in Antarctica, weather.
Or Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday.
So these guys died, but they were found, and among them were found some of the finds, some of the things. This is a scientific expedition, obviously.
Sure.
Some of the notes they made, some of the weather notes, a trio of penguin eggs, emperor penguin eggs.
Nice.
So this was kind of the crown jewel of the stuff that they accumulated during the scientific expedition, and here's why. Apparently, back in this era, this is 1911, I think, people thought that emperor penguins, because they couldn't fly, were the most primitive birds on the planet.
Yeah.
They hadn't evolved. And people were real keen on proving or disproving Darwin's new theory.
Gotcha.
About evolution through natural selection. So they figured, if you go find the eggs of this very primitive bird, you're going to find the link to dinosaurs and birds. The reason why is because the Edwardians also believed that an animal went through all the stages of evolution during its gestation.
Okay.
So they figured, hey, take some emperor penguin eggs, crack them open, you're going to find a dinosaur. Right? It didn't work out like that.
But they found the very cute emperor penguin.
They did, dead inside, of course, frozen to death. And now that I've seen the March of the Penguins, I realize just how mean that expedition kind of was.
I didn't see that.
Oh, man.
I know.
You don't mess with an emperor penguin egg. They go through a lot to keep those things safe.
Sure.
And warm and hatched. And you just don't steal three of them.
Agreed.
Captain Robert Scott did.
And you can't today either, I imagine.
You can't, but you can pay someone to take you as close as you like, and if you're a jerk, you could conceivably do it.
Sneak one out in your old purse?
Yeah, let's talk about vacationing in Antarctica. Did you know you can do that?
Well, I do now.
Yeah, me too.
Let's talk about the body of land itself, because it's pretty remarkable. It's South Pole, like you said.
Yep.
99.5% of the landmass is ice, and I think the other 0.5 is a small putting green. If I'm not mistaken, some nice zoysia
right
growing there. During the winter, they the ice gets bigger, obviously, making it the fifth largest continent, 5 million square miles of largely ice, and that's a lot of ice.
It is,
even though it's shrinking, which we'll talk about a little bit.
Yeah, but naturally, during the seasons, it expands and contracts slightly.
Sure.
Yeah,
as ices want to do.
Yeah.
When it's warm, which is November to February, it's going to be below freezing almost all the time. In the winter, it can drop to 90 degrees below Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. And I got a world record here of 128 below zero.
Wow.
In 1983 at the Vostok station.
Wow.
Very dry, which is awesome because it's like pristine, powdery snow, blustery winds. Actually, that's not the good part.
Well, the winds are almost constant. And they get up to like 200 miles an hour.
You ever seen The Thing?
Yeah. And by the way, 200 miles an hour is 321 kilometers per hour for everybody else.
Sure. And you know what? 90 degrees below Fahrenheit is minus 68 Celsius.
Yeah.
I'd like to convert to our friends in other weird places. So,
yeah. Chew on that, Canada.
not a lot of people live there. In fact, the only people that live there are people that have set up research stations there.
Yeah, I guess some of them are manned year-round, which is pretty crazy.
Sure, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I say if you go to a research station during the time from, what, February to November?
Yeah.
You're going to find maybe 50 people there, and then when it's bustling from November to February...
Summertime,
yeah. There's going to be maybe 150 people there. But all of these are temporary residents. No one lives on Antarctica.
Well, temporary... In a living sense, but they're permanent structures.
Okay, yeah, right.
They're not living in tents.
The residents are temporary.
Yes, yes.
Not their structures. But there have been people who were born on Antarctica.
Yeah, now that was a cool fact of the show, I thought.
Yeah. Have you heard of Emilio Marcos de Palma?
I have indeed.
You have?
He's Antarctican.
He is. He's the first Antarctican ever. He was born in January 1978. And... it was a bit of a ploy, actually. His father worked at a research station in Antarctica, and the Argentinian government found out that this guy's wife was pregnant and hustled her down to Antarctica to give birth there in an attempt to lay claim to sovereignty of Antarctica.
Yeah, and that's because no one is generally born there. There's a lot of nations over the years that have tried to claim it as their own, including Argentina, Australia, Chile, France, mm-hmm. Great Britain, New Zealand, and Norway.
Right.
And I'm surprised the U.S. isn't on there. Don't we know that there's land out there that we don't have our name on?
Chile pulled the same stunt as Argentina, I think 6 years after Emilio Marcos de Palma was born, and a kid named Juan Pablo Camacho was the second Antarctican ever born there.
That's right.
But... you can have as many babies as you want there. You're not going to establish sovereignty because there's a treaty from 1959 called the Antarctic Treaty, appropriately enough. And basically it says the Antarctic doesn't belong to anybody. It's like the oceans. It belongs to everyone and no one. No one can lay claim there. And because it doesn't belong to anybody and because it belongs to everybody, it's protected from war and it's a nuclear-free zone.
You
can't wage war in Antarctica.
War anyway.
No, I know. Who are you going to fight?
Yeah, exactly.
Like
the
10 other people?
Yeah. Or, in the case of The Thing, you would be fighting some horrific shape-shifting beast.
Right. And by the way, we should probably point out, I think it's still commonly overlooked, Antarctica is the only place where you can find penguins, right? Except for zoos and aquariums. They're not in the Arctic.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Penguins, Antarctic.
Gotcha.
And also, if you, you know, I know you love H.P. Lovecraft here or there.
Sure.
if you are into Antarctic and you want to be scared out of your wits by an emperor penguin, read At the Mountains of Madness by Lovecraft.
Yeah, I want to read that one.
Dude, that's probably his best one.
Really?
And it's set entirely in Antarctica.
I think they're making a movie.
I think they have before.
Peter Jackson's looking into it, I think.
That would be good.
Yeah.
He's probably the only person who could pull it off.
Oh, yeah?
But he'll probably fail like everybody else.
What about Eugene Levy? You don't think he could do it?
He could, but it'd be too charming, you know? Like, it wouldn't exist in the canon.
Or a Christopher Guest movie.
I just saw Spinal Tap for the first time the other day.
First time ever?
Ever.
Shut up.
Yumi was like, what do you mean you haven't seen Spinal Tap?
So yeah, that's
weird. Watched it, right?
Uh-huh.
I loved it. I had no idea what I was missing. I tweeted to Michael McKean and said, are you aware that you're in Spinal Tap? And he tweeted back.
Shut up.
Wait, what?
Really?
That's what he said. Yeah, I favorited it.
So we're on, was that personally or that was SYSK?
SYSK.
So we're on his radar in a small way.
Apparently.
Wow.
At the very least, he thought it was a funny tweet.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And I can't believe you never saw that.
Never.
I literally watched that movie over 50 times in college. Like, I can recite it almost by heart.
I can totally see that.
Yeah.
I can see that. I mean, I loved, you know, Best in Show a lot, so I knew I'd like Spinal Tap.
Yeah. Well, that was the original.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah. It was strange seeing Harry Shearer, because I just associate him with The Simpsons almost entirely.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He was great in that, too.
I could talk about this stuff all day. Let's get back to Antarctica.
Yeah.
Or we should do a Christopher Guest Spinal Tap podcast.
Okay.
So if you want a vacation there, which you can do, you got to get there. And in this case, getting there, I don't know if it's half the fun, but it's half the challenge because you're not going to find any I-20s zooming into Antarctica or any Delta airline flights landing there.
Right. Most of the action when you're traveling to Antarctica takes place on the Antarctic Peninsula, which is a sweep of land that juts out toward southern South America.
I imagine almost all of Antarctica is still very much not trod upon.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It was just explored, like, at the beginning of the last century, basically.
Yeah, people are like, why do I want to go down there? Prisma took us off.
Right, exactly. So, like you were saying, like, it's not easy to get to, and you're going to get to the point that's easiest to get to from southern South America. So, most likely you're going to take a ship, a cruise ship, probably, from Argentina or Chile, and show up.
Which seems weird that they're that close.
It's very close, isn't it? Isn't it weird?
Yeah, like, you think of, like, hot temperatures.
You do, but then you're like, oh, wait, that's Bolivia I'm thinking of. Chile's actually right by Antarctica.
The first commercial cruise liners, because you're going to get there by ship, is how you're going to get there. And cruise ship is one of the most popular ways to do that these days.
Yeah.
The first one came in 69. And
that was the Lindblad Explorer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just to give you an idea of the increase in tourism over the years. In the early 90s, only about 9,000 people per year. And just a couple of years ago, in 2007 to 2008, 46,000. Which doesn't sound like a lot of people, but
no,
it's a lot for Antarctica.
Right. Especially when you consider the proportion that were wearing Mickey Mouse ears at the time they were cruising around the glaciers.
Drinking Chilean wine.
Yeah.
There is an tourist association, the IAATO, International Association of Antarctic Tour Operators.
Right.
Formed in the early 90s, and their mission basically is to keep everything safe and keep everything above board and ethical on a environmental scale.
Yeah. Because
they don't want it to be ruined.
Antarctica is supposedly pristine.
It is.
We found out it isn't, though. That same the same Scott expedition.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know how, I don't want to think how, but came by some emperor penguin skins. And they're still to this day used to as a control sample when you're comparing tainted emperor penguin skins today. And they found out that DDT's actually made its way down there to Antarctica.
Really?
So it's not really pristine.
Jeez. Well, it's pretty pristine.
Right. Well, now that you have all these ships and people running all over the place.
Well, exactly. It's like the Everest deal.
Exactly.
November to March is, like we said, this quote-unquote summertime. So that's when tourists are most likely going to be there. A little bit smaller of an ice sheet, which means boats are going to be able to get around easier because you got to be able to navigate through the ice sheets. And not a whole lot of boats have the kind of hull that it can withstand bumping into icebergs.
No, this was very alarming to me.
It was to me, too.
There are people who are going on cruises, on cruise ships.
Yeah.
And these cruise ships can't withstand an iceberg. The Lindblad Explorer.
Yeah, the first one.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure
that was also the first one. That was also the one that sank in 2007. It was the same exact ship.
Isn't really?
That ironic? Yeah. They changed the name to the MS Explorer.
Huh.
But it was the same exact ship. The first one, the first cruise ship to go to Antarctica, was also, I believe, the first one to sink in 2007.
That's a nostalgia
and
tour.
It was actually outfitted to withstand an iceberg, and it still sunk. So then you consider that there's plenty of cruise lines down there that aren't in any way equipped to take an iceberg. Apparently, they're very worried that this is a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, let's go ahead and go there then. Since 2007, there have been four ships that have run aground, which is not a good place to run aground.
No. Well, plus it's not good for Antarctica because it's like, hey, have you met our refined fuel yet?
Yeah, that's true. But if you do run aground and you're in a cruise ship incident, you're going to be stuck there for a little while. Because it's not like any other place where they can just send out a SAR team and all of a sudden you're getting rescued 6 hours later. So in 2007, with the MS Explorer, these passengers were in lifeboats. It says for hours. I wonder how long.
I don't know. I can imagine a while.
And they got picked up by another cruise ship, right? So it wasn't even a SAR team that came to rescue them.
No, it was a Norwegian Cruise Lines, I think, that came and got them.
So they're like, thank you.
And that same year, actually, Ann Curry from, what is she, from the Today Show?
She's from a show.
She was doing...
in the mornings.
She was doing a piece called Ends of the Earth, and she went down to Antarctica. And she and her crew ended up getting stuck there for days. And they just hung around the research station, which we'll get to in a second.
Because of freak weather, though, right? Not like an accident.
No, but the freak weather is... apparently fairly common, so you just call it, again, weather down there,
right,
or Tuesday weather. But apparently if you book an Antarctic vacation, the tour operator says don't make any big plans on 2 weeks of either side of your trip because there's no telling really when you're going to go down there. Shooting for this window, but it might not be that window.
That might put me off, not from a schedule standpoint, but just from fear.
Right.
You know?
And then I have a story for you.
Let's hear it.
So... this is all in summer. Like, you might get stuck there during the summer.
Right.
If you're in winter, there's no way for you to get out. You're absolutely stuck there. Nobody's coming in, and you're not coming out. You have to hunker down for the winter.
Yeah, they shut it all down, right? All travel?
Yes. And there, I think beginning in 1959, the Russians built the Novolazarevskaya. That's my Russian.
Nice.
Their Antarctic base, the Russian Antarctic base, was built. And 2 years later, there was a surgeon there named Leonid Rogozov.
Okay.
And he was stuck there for the winter.
By himself?
No, he was with some other people, okay, but he was the only physician.
Right.
And he just happened to figure out that he had acute pancreatitis.
Oh, man.
And that he was about to die. And that he had two choices. He could either allow himself to die, or he could perform an appendectomy on himself. I'm sorry, he had appendicitis.
Okay, what did he do?
He performed an appendectomy on himself.
Wow.
When you're doing this, you can't knock yourself out, so he had no anesthesia whatsoever.
Oh, my God.
And he stayed awake the whole time. He would work for 4 or 5 minutes as he was carving. There's a famous picture of him, like, carving himself, and he's just stained with blood. he'd work for 4 or 5 minutes, rest for about 20, 30 seconds, try to keep from passing out. And he finally did it. He successfully performed surgery on himself and lived to, 2000, I think, is when he died.
He lived another 2000 minutes.
But could you be badder than that?
He's pretty bad. He's up there with, Onoda.
Yeah.
And, who was the white death?
Simo Haya.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to see those guys sit down and have a tough off.
Yeah, like an arm wrestling competition.
Yeah.
So anyway, you're stuck there in the winter for sure, but you can frequently get stuck there in the summer too.
Which, hey, you know, it's only like 15 below in the summer.
I know.
You're golden.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Sightseeing cruises, probably what the most popular thing to do, like the Alaskan cruise. They'll run you through the Kodak Gap, which, did you look at the pictures of this place?
No, is it pretty?
Oh, my gosh. The Lemaire Channel is the official name between the Booth Island Mountains and the Arctic Peninsula. But they call it that, obviously, because they should call it the Digital MPEG Gap now, I guess.
Sure.
But it's extremely photogenic. It's where you see, like, those just, like, ice blue cave, ice caves that you can, like, go through in your boat and stuff like that.
Nice.
I guess not caves, but tunnels.
Cool.
Pretty amazing.
And hope you don't strike either side.
Exactly. So they're going to take you on these cruises. They're going to get you close. Some of these tours will take you actually onto land from a smaller boat or a helicopter for a little while. But you're not going to be spending a whole lot of time on land if you're doing one of the cruise ships.
Right. There are some expeditions you can undertake. Like there's some that you can cross-country ski to the South Pole.
Yeah.
And you camp along the way. It's like a two-week tour, I think.
Yeah.
I'll bet it's pretty cool, too, but
sure.
I think you have to be kind of strong of mind, probably.
Yeah, or else and body.
You'll go nuts,
yeah.
I would imagine.
Well, it depends. I mean, I'm sure there are conditions to where it's, like, quote-unquote warm and just lovely and blue, but there's also going to be the whiteouts
right.
where you can't see your hand in front of your face and the wind is, like, blowing your headgear off, and mm-hmm. yeah, that's no good.
Well, plus, also, I think plenty of it's barren. It's just this... the same view,
yeah, sure.
like 360 degrees, which has to drive you a little nutty, too.
It's lovely, though.
You can also, if you're insane already, run a marathon in Antarctica.
I'm going to tell my friend James about this. He's a trail runner and does, like, these trail marathons
yeah.
and these crazy things. And I think he's doing one in Ireland soon, so he likes to travel. I'm going to turn him on to this.
All he needs is about $16,000. And he can join in the Adventure Network International full or half marathon. I would imagine it's 15.5 for the half marathon and then 16,000 for the full marathon. But you're running in the interior of Antarctica at about minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit. And you're going to have to deal with the temperature, the wind, changes
yeah.
in elevation, emperor penguins trying to trip you because they got money on somebody else.
And let's be honest, running a marathon.
Yeah, let's not forget that part.
That's challenging in July.
It
in Atlanta.
Keeps me at home right there.
What I want to know what they run in though, shoe wise.
Yeah, I wonder too.
You know, I wonder if it's. I mean, obviously they're not wearing snowshoes or anything like that, or spikes. I guess there's areas where just heavy tread would work.
I would think so.
There's got to be.
Or else, what are you going to do? You can't run a marathon in snowshoes.
No, that's
die.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
So once you're there, you want to pass a little time. You want to see some things that are awesome besides the Kodak Gap. You can go check out the mountain there, and you can even climb it. And it's really not – I didn't get a height on that, did you?
No, but it's a four-mile climb.
Which isn't that much.
No.
I mean, it's nothing to sneeze at, but it's no Everest.
But I imagine there's probably a lot of ice to it, ice climbing and as well as just rock climbing.
Mount Vincent is what we're talking about, of course.
Vincent.
What'd I say?
Vincent.
Vincent.
Yeah.
Not Vincent.
Right.
Okay.
It's the son of Vincent.
Gotcha. Sorry about that. You can go get your picture made in a bikini in front of the little South Pole marker at the Amundsen Scott South Pole Station. It's a very famous American research center at the South Pole, and they have right. a little candy cane pole with a little silver ball on top of it. And I've seen a lot of pictures of ladies in bikinis taking their picture there.
So the Americans never said this is our land, but they're the ones who built the research station like virtually on top of the South Pole.
Yeah.
And Amundsen Scott, that's named after the two guys who made it to the South Pole, including Robert Scott.
And Roald Amundsen.
Yeah.
When was this, the early 1900s?
It was 1911 and 1912, which makes it seem like Amundsen beat the tar out of Scott, but it was really 4 weeks, December and January.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And when you go, you're going to find that there are very friendly people at this facility, that there are tours already set up. It's kind of a routine thing to, like,
yeah.
go to, you know, the American South Pole Station because, I mean, if you like the outdoors, you're going to love Antarctica, but there's not that much to do, really.
No.
There really isn't.
You check out the – there's a lot of wildlife.
Well, yes. And apparently one of the cool things about emperor penguins and penguins in general – is they are not at all afraid of humans.
That's because we've never killed them with reckless abandon.
I know.
Or at least as far as they know.
Right. And apparently they'll just ignore us and hang out with us and...
pose for pictures?
Yeah. They'll do close-ups. But just about any naturalist or biologist will tell you, just hanging around an animal and watching it like some slack-jawed goon...
Sure.
...is going to produce stress in that animal most likely because the animal... even though it's not scared of you as a predator, it doesn't know what you're going to do or what you're doing or what you want. And you just probably should keep that in mind.
Yeah.
When you're observing penguins. Don't chase the penguins.
Right.
And when I said yelled at.
When I said a lot of wildlife, let me clear that up. It's not like Yosemite National Park wildlife. But it is a very hospitable place for certain kinds of animals, especially animals that live in the water, because there's just tons of protein. You got whales, you got penguins, you got polar bears.
Man, you have to see March of the Penguins.
I don't know. You know, it was one of those movies that just got by me.
It is. I think it won an Oscar.
Yeah, sure. Wasn't it Morgan Freeman?
Yeah.
Our buddy?
Yeah. but yeah, it's a really great movie.
Have you ever been to the aquarium's penguin exhibit?
Yes.
You know, you can stick your head up, you can crawl into the tunnel.
Right.
And you stick your head up into a clear plexi.
Mm-hmm.
Hole for your head, basically.
Yeah.
And the penguins are right there, right in front of your face.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're stressing me out.
Exactly.
Observing me. So, Chuck, the water is generally, or the sea is good for the wildlife around it because they've adapted to it.
Yeah.
If you're one of those polar bear guys, though, you can conceivably jump in during the winter. You should do so at your own risk.
Oh, the humans that do that stuff?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because the water gets down to about 32 degrees Fahrenheit, or I should say up to 32 degrees Fahrenheit, and you're going to freeze because it's zero Celsius.
Yeah.
It's very, very dangerous. And if you do that and you hurt yourself, you're going to find yourself on a long, arduous journey back to Chile or Argentina at your own expense.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of medical help at these stations, and maybe a passing cruise ship will have the good doctor from the Love Boat on board.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to be able to get serious medical attention, and you could be in trouble.
Yep.
Unless you get out of there toot sweet. Or you're going to be performing self-surgery.
Right, exactly.
BDD style.
So how much is this going to run you?
I don't know. Do you know?
I don't know. I've heard you can expect to spend upwards of $10,000. I mean, the marathon was $16,000.
I mean, getting there is going to be pricey, period.
Sure. But like a really probably like full on great stateroom kind of cruise down there, including airfare to South America, is going to run you $10,000 or probably less. I'm sure you can get deals for less, but you need to have a little bit of cash to make it down to Antarctica.
It's not a poor man's vacation.
No.
Is what you're saying.
Yes.
Environmental safety concerns, Josh. We talked about, obviously, what'd you say was there now? DDT?
Yeah.
They found traces of it?
No, they found it in penguins.
Jeez. In April 2009, there was a joint session of the Antarctic Treaty Panel and the Arctic Council, and they met in Baltimore, Maryland, which I'm sure that's nice in April, but for some reason I thought they would say, like, let's go to Phoenix in July and hold our meeting and thaw. But they had, you know, a lot on the agenda, including global warming talks, shipping routes, stuff like that. But they did talk about tourism, and not coincidentally, or coincidentally, around that same time, a 25-mile ice shelf broke off, shattered into the sea, which kind of was like symbolic of, hey, we really need to talk about tourism.
25 miles.
That's huge.
And the tourism and the loss of ice has a sort of self-reinforcing thing going on, because you lose ice, you actually get more tourism.
Yeah.
Which is ostensibly responsible for even further climate change in the area. And so you lose more ice and you get even more tourism. And the reason why is because you lose a 25-mile piece of ice, cruise ships go, oh, we can go in here now.
Right, we have a passage.
Exactly.
Jerks.
So they're coming up with, I guess, an idea of how they can, they want to ban the construction of any kind of hotels or anything like that, any permanent
not even
tourist
ice hotel
accommodations. No, not even.
Which are pretty
although
cool.
That would probably, no, that would be permanent down there, I'm sure.
So yeah.
I was going to say it wouldn't be permanent, but yeah,
they usually melt
in
the summer.
Right. They want to do a limitation to the number of ships that can come in every year.
Yeah.
Restrictions on how close ships can come to shore.
Yeah, like, are you going to drop people off here at the shoreline?
Yep.
Just to see those little penguins?
But here's the problem. They can't just say, like, okay, we're going to have 50 ships a year or 20 or whatever. If you touch the penguins, you'll be executed by the International Criminal Court at The Hague.
Yeah.
They can't say these things because no one has any sovereign right to issue any kind of decree over Antarctica.
So what can they do? Just establish guidelines and recommend that signatory countries and travel agencies follow them?
Yeah.
And suggest, highly suggest that?
But right now there's only 47 signatory countries on the Antarctic Treaty.
Yeah, I wonder who's on there. I was going to look that up, but I didn't get a chance.
Right.
And the reason why they don't ban people outright, not only can they not, but one of the most important parts of the treaty is that it does allow freedom of access. They're like, you know what, you can come here.
Anybody from coming there. Yeah,
and I feel like they want to allow it, just to a degree.
Sure,
I might be wrong there, but.
Well, I'm sure the tour operators association's like, no, we want to tread lightly here.
Exactly.
And then speaking of getting stuck in Antarctica, one last thing, you know about this. A couple of years ago, a case of 11 bottles of scotch, McKinley scotch, which isn't made any longer, and was originally produced in 1896 or 97, and was part of the Ernest Shackleton Nimrod expedition of 1907, was left beneath his hut and forgotten for like 100 years, and they found it in 2006.
When did we talk about this?
We talked about it on the webcast.
Ah, the good old webcast.
And they got it out of there. Remember, you and I were like, what's going to happen to this because
like, who's
of that treaty? Like, Antarctica is there for scientific expedition. You're supposedly not supposed to touch anything that has any sort of historical or scientific significance. It's not supposed to come out.
Right.
So they're like, you can't really remove this.
Guess we'll have to drink it down there.
Well, it turns out that Canterbury Museum in Christchurch, New Zealand now has this scotch in its exhibit.
I can't remember. Did they sample it? Someone did, didn't they?
No one will probably ever taste the scotch. Instead, they've allowed some scotch makers to take samples and see if they can recreate it because no one has the original recipe anymore.
I bet someone's taking a nip.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
Somebody has.
Surely some rich guy was like, get me that scotch. Here's as much money as you need.
Yeah.
And it didn't go into the hands of some rich scotch lover. It went to a relatively unknown museum in New Zealand, which is pretty cool.
I bet there's some Kiwi security guard that's taken the tiniest of nips.
Right.
And then filled it back up with, like, tea.
Yes.
They'll never know. It's like the mini bar.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
So you got anything else?
I don't.
So that concludes our episode on alcoholism among night watchmen. And if you want to learn more about that or Antarctica, you want to type in Antarctica in the handy search bar at HowStuffWorks.com, which means it's time for listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this email exchange, because I'm actually going to read my response to sort of an upset Canadian. This is about daylight saving. Which, by the way, we misspoke. Go ahead and say that. We're getting beat up by the people south of the equator when we said that they spring back and fall forward.
Yeah.
That it's not so. They spring forward and fall back. It's just at opposite times as us. Know what I'm saying?
No.
They spring forward, they fall back, but their spring is opposite of our spring. You haven't seen the Facebook and emails? They've been killing us.
Yes, but their spring... Okay, I gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. It was very, very North Hemisphere-centric.
And so I need to explain myself here because I got an email from Marie from Canada, and she was a little mad at me. Just finished listening to the podcast on Daylight Saving Time. You mentioned that in the civilized world, time makes no difference, and only the rising and setting of the sun is really important. I wanted to offer you a different perspective on that. I live in Whitehorse, Yukon, Canada, and the sun is currently rising at 9:53, sets at 3:51, and that's a whole 5 hours and 57 minutes of light in the dead of winter. I assure you that we are a fully functioning part of the civilized world here, and setting the time is very important to us. We do observe daylight saving time in the Yukon and in the summer month when we get our, on average, 18 hours of daylight. Having the clocks change makes a huge difference in my daily life. After the long dark, it's a relief that the clocks now allow for a little more vitamin D. I think you, I just found your comments callous. Perhaps you should rely less on these skeptic pages, as it seems to put you in a sour mood.
It makes you mean skeptoid.
Yeah. Please remember that you have a very wide range of listeners, and we are not savages out in the wastelands. We are intelligent people who enjoy learning, and see you and your colleagues as valuable and often entertaining source of information.
She's talking to you, right? Because that sounds like one of your quotes.
It was one of mine.
Okay.
So I wrote Marie back, and I was like, Marie, you either misunderstood or I didn't get it across clearly. I wasn't saying that at all. What I'm saying is the civilized world is the only reason clocks matter to me is because man invented clocks and time, quote unquote, to get on schedule in a commerce way. So businesses could be open and you could reference schedules and work schedules and shopping and things like that. If man had never invented a clock, it wouldn't change anything about the rising and setting of the sun. We would just operate on the rising and the setting of the sun.
It's like I'm watching you,
right?
Set us up for a future listener mail. Yeah.
So it very much matters, obviously, in the civilized world because that's the only place that time matters. I imagine in third world countries where they don't have clocks, they just operate with the rising and the setting of the sun like we did before we invented clocks.
All right. Give me a shovel.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
I certainly wasn't trying to say that people in
of
Canada
course not.
Were uncivilized.
People of Canada, attention. Chuck Bryant means you no harm. He's a very nice guy.
None. I can even sing the Canadian anthem if I
want. And he is never out to hurt anybody's feelings. Even when he does, it's accidental. Please accept his apologies.
So I either misspoke or it was misunderstood or something got garbled up, but sorry, Marie.
So, there you have it. Thank you to all of our friends in Canada for listening. Man, I got to tell you, they tick off easily, especially if you call their Thanksgiving fake Thanksgiving.
They're sensitive people.
They do not like that.
But it's because Americans are arrogant, and they're like, you know what?
Yeah. But they don't necessarily pick up on when we're poking fun at our own arrogance.
Yeah.
Which is surprising, because they gave us Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wittier men alive.
So, if you have a great story about Dan Aykroyd, we want to hear about it. Okay?
Heck yeah.
You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can go on to Facebook and let us know about it at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. And you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.